Good morning. So I want to, point you back to Matthew 28. That's where we'll be this morning, if you want to go to Matthew 28. So I want to begin today by thanking the church for their support as the students went to Dominican Republic. Just over a week ago, we were getting back. The whole process from raising funds to preparing and going was such a blessing, and the church's presence and support was felt in all of that. Our trip was fantastic, and as I go through today's sermon, I'll mention some of the moments from our trip. But I would encourage you to ask students about their experience as opportunities arise and just hear from them what they've done. They may want to share. They may not want to share. But if you ask them, then they have no choice. They have to. So there you go. So today, our core value as we continue to go through them is the Great Commission. And I guess having just come off a trip, that makes me qualified to speak on the topic. In all actuality, I think there's probably a lot more. A lot of others who'd be better at this topic based on their experience. But having been out in the field recently in another country, it certainly gave me some good things to think about regarding the topic, which we might summarize as the call to go. So, ready, set, go. It's a common phrase in the English language, and as young kids, you're taught that this is the phrase that sits off a race or a contest. I don't understand why none of you got up and went. Dance and I said, ready, set, go. But I think the reality is because saying go is not enough, right? Where do we go? How far do we go? And maybe most importantly, why should we go? Right? For me, if you said, hey, when I say go, we're going to have a race and it'll be the first one to run a mile, you can be certain that when you say go, I'm just going to sit down. I have no interest in running a mile. Right, sounds horrible to me. It's long distance running. So I know some of you are like, a mile, that's not very long. It's way too long for me. So I'm going to need something a little bit more motivating than maybe just victory to get me to go when the race is a mile. Right, Clayton? That's a long way. No, he doesn't agree. So as you can see, when asking someone to go, it's important that we're clear as to what the goal is. And ultimately, the call to go, as simple as it is, has a lot of questions which need to be answered before one responds. As believers, we know that we've been called to go. When Jesus says, go therefore. And some of us are doing well. Some of us excellent. Some of us are refusing to respond or uncertain as to how or why we should respond. So today we want to look at God's word and consider the call to go. So as we look at the Great Commission, we want to answer the following questions. What is the call to go? How to go, where to go, who should go, why go, and when to go. Okay. We also want to consider what this looks like in not just in our personal lives, but as it's a core value, we want to consider how we as a church partake in the Great Commission, how Crosspoint encourages and participates in it. Our core text today, like I said, is probably what would be considered the most extensive of the gospel Great Commission calls, and it comes from Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. So let me read that for us. And Jesus came and said to them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all I have commanded. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. So here Jesus is addressing the 11 disciples. Of course, Judas is no longer with them. And in this passage, which is in some way similarly repeated in all the Gospels, Christ is calling his disciples to make more disciples and do that throughout the whole world. So the first question we want to answer is, what is the call to go? Jesus calls us to make disciples. And then he clarifies that by saying, baptizing them, teaching them to observe all that he has commanded. So what is the call to go? It is to make disciples. When I think about the Great Commission, I often think about, witnessing, bringing people to Christ, sharing the gospel. And that's certainly an aspect of the call. It's a core one. But Jesus is clear here that there's a depth to what he is asking beyond the sharing of the gospel. He does not just want the gospel shared. He wants those who accept it to be discipled. The task of the Great Commission calls us to share the gospel, and when people accept it, the task of discipling begins. And that's a large task. It involves drawing near, teaching through and by example, and it takes time. These disciples have just spent 3 years being discipled by Jesus. They've seen the effort Christ has taken to disciple them, and now he calls them to do the same thing. When we were in the Dominican last week, I was encouraged to know that our host, Jaime Blandon, was intentional not just to share the gospel, but to disciple. One of Jaime's main aims in his mission field is to plant churches. And during our time there, we went to 3 different churches that he had a hand in planting. One of them he was the pastor of, 2 others he had helped to plant, and he's planted many others in the area. Now, at each of the churches that the students went to, they put on a VBS for the kids in the community. And they played games with them, they sang songs, they did crafts, and then the kids heard about God, specifically the message of the gospel. And it was a great time, but what encouraged me was knowing that if any child heard the gospel and responded to it, that they had a pastor and a local church to disciple them. It was not like a traveling show that presented the gospel and then left any potential convert with no one to follow up or to care for their daily needs, but rather there were people there to provide instruction as well as to how to live in Christ. Jaime was an intentional leader who is asking our team to support the churches in the area. As we consider the call to go and make disciples, it's a big job for any of us, from Jaime to myself to you to the 11 disciples who heard this command originally. And the large nature of this job can feel overwhelming. Here they are, 11 men with a task of reaching the world, not just to share the good news of Christ, but disciple those who follow, to teach them how to live as Christ lived. How are they going to do this? And maybe you feel the same way. Maybe you think about the call to share Christ and disciple those who come to know him, and you're overwhelmed. Maybe the idea of doing this with just one person is overwhelming enough, let alone the call to all nations. Now think about these disciples. They're sitting there thinking, okay, there's 11 of us, and we're supposed to go to all the nations? But this is the beauty of the Great Commission. For what does Christ begin with here? He begins by saying, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. So the message of the Great Commission is coming from the person. That call is coming from the person who has the authority. And then he finishes by saying, I am with you always to the end of the age. So this massive calling to take and disciple the world is backed up by the person who has all the authority. Now think about a young child coming out of their bedroom one morning and telling the family that they need to pack up, right? You've got little kids. Maybe one of your youngest kids comes out of the room and says, hey, pack up, guys. We're going to Disney. All right? I've got a whole week planned. We're going to go to all the parks. We're going to fly down there. It's going to be a great week. And mom and dad look at him and they're like, how are you going to get this done? You got the money? You got the way to get us there? You bought the plane tickets? All right? You planned all this? They don't have the authority, right? They don't have any of the power. And ultimately, this is true of us when we consider the call of the Great Commission. Anything we would like to do, we cannot without the power of Christ working through us. So as we're called to make disciples, we are called and blessed to do this in the power of Christ, the one who has the authority. He's the one that's called us to make disciples. And we must be reliant upon him to have any hope of success in fulfilling this command. It's also a keen reminder that any success we do have is not ours, but it's Christ. So how to go? In the power of Christ. Consider the assurance Christ had given his disciples before he had sent them out to the Israelites. And in Matthew 10, 19 and 20, he says, when they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you're to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speaks, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. So when Jesus called these disciples to go to all nations, they had to have thought back to that time when they had been called to go to Israel and to share with Israel about who Jesus was, this Messiah that was here. And they had that experience and they said, okay, you know, how did that go? Well, it went because Jesus gave us authority. Jesus, by his Spirit, worked in and through us. God provides all we need. This includes our ability to make disciples. I would say that a believer on the mission to fulfill the Great Commission will often feel a keen sense of inadequacy. Yet the inadequacy is important because it's a reminder of our need for Christ, for his power, his grace, and his authority, so that as we go about the task of making disciples, we're constantly in praise of him who provides. This is exactly what Paul was talking about when he says in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can make disciples in all nations through Christ who strengthens me. Paul knows the challenge of sharing the gospel and making disciples, but he knows on whom he must rely to accomplish this. And he knows we can rely on him with certainty as well. That the one who provides authority will strengthen us to do what we have been called to do. So as the call to go seems overwhelming, keep in mind that you have Christ. But on top of this, Christ has given us his word and a body of believers, the church, to us as we attempt to fulfill the Great Commission. We do not do this alone. Now the next question is, where to go? Jesus says, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. God is calling us to go tell the whole world. Where to go? All nations. This really ups it. It's not just making disciples, it's going to the nations. But this shouldn't be a surprise. God has always desired to draw near to his people. And he's always clearly stated that man, his image bearer, is of great value. So it shouldn't be surprising that Christ wants the whole world to know about what he has done for them. The call of where is simple. But there's also a complexity here, right? Because if we all got up and went right now to another nation, then who would be here, right? This would leave our nation empty. To go and make disciples of all nations includes the nation where we currently are. If we're considering the call of the Great Commission, we must certainly consider where we should go, but it's not always the most important question. But it's one we should be asking ourselves. Think of Jim Elliot. You know, Jim Elliot is a missionary best known for having been killed by the Aka natives of Ecuador, a tribe who he had never heard the gospel, of who he went to proclaim it to, and they killed him. He heard the call to all nations, and he knew the Aka had never heard the gospel, and he knew he must go. When they found his body, they found a notebook of his, and one of the notes that he had written read, there is one Christian worker for every 50,000 people in foreign lands, while there is one to every 500 in the United States. Now, this statistic was from his time, but it was in part what prompted him to believe the Great Commission to be rightfully fulfilled for him would lead him to those who were unaware of the gospel. But if you look at his life, it wasn't as if he said, oh, these people don't know the gospel. Okay, I'm gonna do all the things I need to get ready to go there, and then when I get there, then I'll start fulfilling the Great Commission. No, his life was marked by a clear indication that the Great Commission was what he was about. That everywhere he was, from at home and all his preparations, he was making disciples along the way. The Great Commission is the call to share Christ wherever we are and wherever we go. Times this may call you to another nation, another people, but ultimately the answer is where you are. So we say where to go, all nations, but really we also want to note that where we should go is where you are right now. We should go, but if we do not share where we are, then we cannot expect that if we go, now all of a sudden we'll be able to fulfill the Great Commission. No, now that I'm on the mission field, I can do the job. No, now is when we do it, where we are. You know, as the trip with the students wound down last week, and as we were kind of thinking about things, you know, Thursday was more of just a work day. We were done with the VBS. Friday was more of just an enjoying kind of, you know, you got a fun day. One of the things that I heard a lot from the students as they would talk to each other, as they, you know, we had a time of intentional encouragement each evening, was this kind of sense of inadequacy that they had had going on the trip. How are we going to do this? I mean, we gave them a big task. They planned the VBS. None of the adults did any of it. The kids did everything. They came up with the music and the motions and the lessons and the games and the craft. They planned it all. And they felt like, well, I don't really know if I'm able to do this. Is this going to go well? How are we going to do this? You know, we told them there would be 100 kids, and there were, and a lot of, you know, anywhere from 70 to 100 plus at each of these. Kids that don't speak the same language that our students speak. How are they going to do this? And we only had 4 interpreters, maybe 3.5. I don't know. All right. How are they going to do this? And yet each evening they were able to look back and see that God had been working. Sometimes they didn't even see it in themselves. They still weren't sure. Did that go well? But as they spoke to each other, as they said, wow, I saw God at work in you while you taught that lesson that you were so afraid to teach. You were so afraid to get up in front of the kids, and you did it. I was, you know, there. You know, you didn't know if you could interact with the kids, but you went up to them and you were talking to them, even though they didn't know what you were saying and you didn't know what they were saying. You were interacting with them. So they could see God working through and in them. But then the question that we asked them, the thing that we challenged the students with, was to consider, okay, you can do this by the power of Christ in another nation. Why can't you do it at home? Or why not do it at home? Why not step out in faith and do some of the hard things that God is asking you to do? Why can't you? You know, you can go up and talk to a kid that doesn't speak the same language as you. Well, what about at school? Could you go up to that kid that no one's talking to, or you don't know, or is new to the school? Can you talk to them? Or the person at work? Or anyone? What about a person that shows up to church you've never seen before? Can you go talk to them? And really, it's that question that we have to ask ourselves. Can we not do the Great Commission wherever we are and wherever we go? We wait sometimes to say, okay, I got to be going and doing this specific thing before I can start fulfilling it. We get caught up in not fulfilling it because we don't know where. Should you go to another country to share Christ and make disciples? Maybe. It's possible God is calling you to this. Maybe in short-term missions. Maybe in long-term missions in a foreign land. But ultimately, we do it here. We do it at home, at work, when shopping, when we go to our kids' games, our grandkids' games. We do it wherever we go because the Great Commission is about making disciples, and this should be done wherever you are. Now, we want to go on to who, and I think it's pretty evident at this point, who should go? And the answer is you. You know, when I was in high school, as I was finishing up and graduating, I can clearly remember multiple people telling me, you should go into education. You should be a teacher. And I would say, no, I'm not doing that. That is not what I'm doing. Now, if you know me, I'm an educator. So I went to college. I changed majors a couple times. And the next thing you know, I'm a secondary social studies education major. But with the exception that I was only going to teach high school. That's all I was going to teach. I've taught 22 years. I've taught 21 of them in middle school. All right. Now, I say this not as an exact and perfect example of all of you, but the reality is this. Sometimes we get so caught up in thinking, well, God doesn't have this for me. This is not my thing. That's that person's thing, but it's not mine. They can do that, but that's not for me. And we get so caught up in knowing what God's plan is or is not for our life, that maybe we miss what He has for us, what He wants us to do. I want to caution those of you who would say that overseas mission, short-term, long-term, or anything between is not for you. I've heard people that are healthy, able-bodied, skilled people say, overseas missions are not for me. James 4, 13 through 14, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? If you're a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. James is asking in part for us to consider the certainty with which we talk about and think about our lives and what we should do with them. And this, I think, would include the Great Commission. I think we, again, get in a spot in our lives which makes us believe the Great Commission is only for a season or only for some believers. But it's clear that the Great Commission is for all believers from the moment of salvation until we reach eternity with Christ. If we read the Great Commission and we think, well, he's just talking to his disciples, not me. I wasn't there. Well, you're missing what he's saying, right? What's he telling his disciples? Go make more disciples. So what are you? You are a disciple. So what are you called to do? Make more disciples. When you consider the call to go to all nations and you say no, I think you should consider a couple things. One, do you heed the call here? Are you following the Great Commission now, where you are? And two, whether you will not go or whether you are not now, why not? Certainly there are legitimate reasons why going on a short-term trip or long-term missions might not be part of your call to the Great Commission. But I want to challenge you who have always said no or are currently saying no to consider why not. Why not go to Spain if the church sends a team again next year? Why not go to India the next time our church sends a team? Why not use your gifts in another place for the glory of God that more disciples might be made? Certainly there are times and circumstances which make going not possible or unwise, but there is never a time in the life of the believer where the Great Commission stops. There will never be a perfect time to go. Remember, we do not do this in our own strength, but in the strength of Christ. Now, my aim is not to guilt anyone into going to the mission field, but I am asking you to consider why not. Maybe we retire from work, but never God's call to make disciples. May we say no to challenging things, but never at the cost of disobedience to God's commands. So why go? Well, God commands it. 1 John 5:2 through the beginning of 3, by this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and obey His commands. For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. Obedience is a clear sign of our love for God, and so as believers we should be obedient to His calling. Not as a means to earn anything, but as a means to glorify God, who is worthy of glorification. If we truly love the Lord, then we'll want to obey His call. And again, I don't say this to make anyone guilty for their failure to follow the law, to be obedient, but rather as a reminder that obedience is a joy we have in following His commands so that we might bring glory to Him. We need to remind one another of the joy of obedience. It's a pleasure to obey the Lord. Is it easy? No. Certainly it's challenging. It brings pain and suffering at times. Remember what James said, though, in 1, 2 through 4, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. The reality is this. When you obey God's commands, you're more than likely going to be putting yourself in the line of fire for suffering one way or another. But it's in these trials that we gain. It's in the trials of obedience that we find ourselves being sanctified, made more like Christ. But I want to take it beyond just obey, right? As kids, you know, right, that when your parents make you do something and you ask why and they say, because I said so, that answer is typically not the one you were looking for, right? You're hoping for a little bit more than because I said so, all right? And so it feels a little bit like that. Why obey? Well, because God said so. So I want us to consider something else. On the trip, one of the more challenging things for the students to kind of digest was the poverty that they saw. We've taken kids to 4 different countries now. And it'd be nice to go back to the same country, but things have kind of intervened to not allow that to happen. But, you know, it's not the most poverty we've ever seen. The first trip we took with students was to Haiti. And Haiti is, from my perspective of what I've seen, and I've not seen lots and lots of places, but it is one of the poorest and worst countries probably to live in right now. And that was 10 years ago, and it's only gotten worse. And, you know, the last 3 years, they really haven't had a functional government. And Haiti shares an island with the Dominican Republic. Hispaniola is two halves, Haiti and the Dominican. And a lot of who we interacted with were Haitians. Haitians who have fled the Dominican, or Haitians who have fled Haiti to the Dominican. And they have hardly anything. You know, 20 people in tiny one-room homes. And the kids, you know, obviously are heartbroken over what they see and their lack of food, not just things, but food. And we had the opportunity to bless a couple of Haitian churches with food that then the Haitian churches handed out. And that was a great encouragement. And so, you know, as they kind of witness all of this and they see the lack of what Haitians have, you know, they're fleeing a country to go to another country. And the reality is this, Dominicans do typically not like Haitians. They hate them. And so there's a couple of things at play. One, so here they are, they know that, and yet they are so desperate for a better opportunity that are going to come to the Dominican, where the Dominicans will probably deport them. 175,000 a month is the aim of the Dominican government. So they don't want them there either. And many Haitian children are born in the Dominican. They're born without any paperwork. They don't exist in terms of paperwork. And they will never have any birth certificate, any identification, anything like that. So finding a job and their future is very uncertain. And so there's just so much in this that is really hard. And you want to provide for their needs. And we certainly should be providing for their needs. But the thing that we reminded the students is that, you know what? Giving them food is great. But if any of them come to Christ, there's nothing better. There's nothing greater than that. Because He is all we need. And that sounds trite when you see people that are struggling and starving. But when you see the joy of a Haitian believer, when you know that they have the certainty of Christ, then there's nothing better than that, because that is all any of us need, is Christ. So why do we go? We go so that others may know Christ. Because that is all that matters in the end, right? You could give a Haitian child the documentation. You could, you know, Jaime told us a story of someone that came and wanted to adopt a kid that didn't have parents, and give them an education, and give them a better and more comfortable life. And they did that. And they gave them a more comfortable and better life. But that child has not accepted Christ. And so even if they have the most comfortable life for the rest of their life, if they die without knowing Christ as their Savior, what have they gained? And so we go that others may know Christ. So we come to our last question. This one is nice and simple. When should we go? Now. Do not hesitate. May none of us hesitate to share the gospel, to make disciples, to obey. May we respond like Isaiah. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?" Then I said, "Here I am. Send me." We want to go now. Now, before I touch on some applications, I want to take a moment to share ways we participate as a church in the Great Commission. I think first and foremost, we aim to make disciples. We don't just seek to present the gospel, though we certainly do that. But we try to encourage those of us who are believers to know all Christ has commanded. We do this Sunday mornings, but also in small groups and Wednesday night equip and in many other ways. Practically, as a means of supporting missionaries, we take a portion of our annual budget and put it toward missionaries. On the wall, as you head back to the restrooms, you'll see a map of those we support and where they go to make disciples. Each year, we take a special offering, and most times this is for making disciples overseas. As a church, I've mentioned already, we have short-term trips. Our trip to Spain has occurred annually for over 4 years now. We send students out on our missions or service trips yearly. And we've had at least 3 trips to India. We have our block party that's coming up here in the middle of August, providing a great opportunity to begin making disciples as we invite the community to come see what we're about and who Christ is. So we do lots of different things, but let's talk about some practical ways. If we're going to do this now, because my assumption is you're not going to be like Mike and leave mid-sermon and go get on a plane. All right, you know, he was so excited by this call to the Great Commission, he just couldn't wait. All right. So some practical applications here. But before I do that, I want to say that I believe as a church, many of you are doing an amazing job of making disciples already. There are many of you participating in the Great Commission. So I don't want you to hear me as saying, hey, we don't do this. We don't do this at all. I think we do. As I worked on the sermon, I was encouraged to think of many Crosspoint members who are intentional to disciple others, including many who have intentionally discipled Susie and myself and my kids. So for most of you, the call to go is not to go, but rather to keep going. But here's some practical ways you can do this. One thing is to parent. Parenting provides clear and open opportunities for the Great Commission. For parents, the Great Commission begins, though it does not end, in your home. Parents, we have a responsibility to make disciples of our children. It's our job. We should aim to share the gospel through word and action as we parent and to teach them to observe all that Christ has commanded. I was greatly impacted by parents who partook in the Great Commission, and I know many of you were as well. I also know that there are many parents in this room who have done a marvelous job of this, and you should be commended for that. Now, some of you are not just parents, but you're grandparents now. And grandparenting provides clear and open opportunities for the Great Commission as well. While you have time with your grandchildren, it might be a little more limited than what you had as parents with your children, you have a lot of time and influence. Enjoying your grandchildren and maybe spoiling them a bit is not a problem unless all your time is spent spoiling and a gospel focus is lacking. You have a great opportunity to accomplish the Great Commission while being a grandparent. I know my children have been greatly blessed to have four grandparents who have attempted to practically teach our children to follow all the Lord has commanded. I know that they have also supported Susie and I as parents in our ministry with the youth, and that's been a great blessing. I know that I had grandparents. My sister and I had four grandparents as well. We were blessed with four grandparents that were intentional to be Great Commission grandparents. So may you do that. Work and play are also excellent venues for the Great Commission. Outside of the home, most of us spend a lot of our time working. And we work with others regularly. We build relationships with our coworkers. It is a great venue for the Great Commission. Share the gospel with your coworkers. Make disciples of them. I would say this is an area where I know I need to do a better job. I believe that I live a life that reveals my allegiance to Christ, but it fails in boldness sometimes of sharing the gospel and attempting to make disciples. Next to home and work, we have our hobbies, our areas of play, the other things that we do. Maybe it's pickleball or golf or a club or organization. Maybe as parents, you're in that season right now where your free time is watching your kids play, whether it's sports or something else. And almost always, these things are done in some kind of community, and that provides an opportunity to make disciples. And I've not always been perfect at this, but one of the greatest opportunities, my son and my youngest daughter, they play golf. And if you're looking to get your kids in a sport where you can be a great commissioner during their sport, golf is the sport, all right? Because you have 5 hours, all right? My dad is taking my son to play today, and I'll take him tomorrow. Well, 5 hours with, there's three other kids, and they almost always have their parents, sometimes their grandparents as well with them, and they're stuck with you for 18 holes, all right, for 5 hours. And, you know, we've had lots of great conversations during that time and opportunities to witness, to build friendships, and, you know, that has happened, and it's been really good. And so I would encourage you to consider that. You know, your kids are part of a team. You know, you have, you know, some of you travel all over the place with these other families. Do you use that opportunity to be a light for the Lord, to make disciples? It's challenging for sure, because many of them are not in it for the glorification of God, but you can show them that that is your aim and your purpose. Next, consider going. Do not discount the idea that Christ may be calling you to short-term or long-term missions. Consider at the least how you might pray for and support missionaries. Right? You've got the missionaries that we've sent or that we are part of in sending, and there's prayer requests that they have for them. Pray for them. Send them an email of encouragement. Consider ways you can support them. You know, Jaime told us a lot of stories about how others had supported him. At the most amazing of times, he would get money that he had needed for a certain project, or he would get a team that would come in and do exactly what was needed, or he would know that people were praying for him in a difficult season. And that's not just true of him. There are many missionaries who have been blessed by the support of other believers. So you consider going, consider supporting as well. And then finally, and this kind of falls in with that last one, encourage others. May we encourage one another. May we remind one another of the gospel and how it changed us. May we encourage one another to participate in the Great Commission. The reality is there's a lot more that I could say about what we can do. And I want you to consider in what ways you might partake in the Great Commission. I, talked to some people after first service, and they talked about neighbors they knew that they needed to do a better job of sharing with, or a coworker. Don't hold back. Go and allow Him who has all authority to work in and through you. So I want to finish by asking you to consider something. In Genesis 11, there's had one language. But living in their pride, God chose to confuse their language and disperse men across the world. And then, as the resurrected Jesus stood before his disciples, he shared the Great Commission. He was in part asking them and us to be a part of the mission to reverse Babel and to bring the nations together in worship of Him alone. Now, of course, this won't be fulfilled while sin exists, but at the end of time, the Great Commission will be fulfilled. Revelation 7, 9 through 10 tells us, "After this I looked, and behold, a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, with palm branches in their hands and crying out with a loud voice, 'Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb.'" Jesus is calling you to be a part of this. He does this so you might show your love for Him and obedience, but also so that you might see how His might extends way beyond you. When you go, you see that God truly is omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent. Whether you're in Greenwood, in the Dominican, in Ecuador, Spain, Honduras, Hungary, India, Thailand, Lebanon, or even in Antarctica, God is present. He wants His people to be in all places, spreading His name for His glory. The call is to go. Let us continue. Let's pray.